Vegas, Nevada. You're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas. The following is a live LV Rocks original webcast. Visit LVRocks.com for studio cam and live chat room.
Welcome back to Subject to Discussion. This is the New Year's edition of the program, live on LVRocks.com. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. Call me anything you want, just don't call me late for dinner. And a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, whatever. Happy Festivus to everybody who celebrated the non-traditional Christmas with the aluminum pole and the acts of physical strength immortalized on Seinfeld. And this is Tuesday night, 7 o'clock Pacific time in Las Vegas, which means it's 8 o'clock Pacific time if you're in the Mountain Time Zone, 9 o'clock if you're in the Central Time Zone, Chicago, or 10 p.m. Eastern if you're in New York City. And the website for the program is subject number 2discussion.com. Email is subject to discussion at lvrocks.com. And, of course, the show is a program. Excuse me, this is a program, not a show. This is a program. All the news programs are programs, not shows. A show is like Letterman or Leno. This is a program. The program is podcasted on lvrocks.com. Click on lvrocks.com. On the left-hand side is podcasts. Click on that. It takes you to all the programs that are podcasted from. And this is subject to discussion, brother. There you go. Yeah, they could do it. I could do it. You know what I mean? Tonight, in a little while, will be Justin from the Dunkelfint Political Centrist blog with a kind of a year-end review of the political stories of the year and what to look forward to in 06 as we move to a midterm election for the Congress. And then in the beginning of the second hour, will be DJ Radiohead from blogcritics.org. Who will go through a review of music for the year in review and also reveal his real name on the program. So this is a spoiler alert, I guess, for blogcritics.org. And then ending the program, of course, will be Judy from the sciencefictionbuzz.com website, and she'll give us a report about the year in review for sci-fi and what to look forward to in 06, which is, the premiere of Galactica coming January 6th on Sci-Fi Channel, and we're looking forward to that. So we'll see what happens. I'm working on a deal after the first of the year, which could change the segment order next year, but I'm still working on that, so we'll see what happens with that. And first of all, I'm going to give, before I go into the news to you, I got my S2D's Things of the Year I have here. I was looking at my Things of the Year. Since Time Magazine did that bogus Persons of the Year thing, I thought, well, I'll jump on it too. Maybe I have a little more credibility than Time Magazine, given that ridiculous to, what's that, Bono, and the Gateses. I mean, what the hell? I mean, I still say Mother Nature should be the Person of the Year because they had the most overwhelming influence on the world events, I think, is the tsunami and then, of course, the hurricanes in the south and all the earthquake in Pakistan. I mean, I think Mother Nature should have been it, but oh well. My Things of the Year, and of course in politics, my Person of the Year for politics was President Bush, and he was inaugurated, and he had so much of this capital, political capital you wanted to spend, and yada, 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 and he started with so much promise at the beginning of the year, he lost pretty much all his credibility throughout the year with the Iraq business, and then he blew a chance to get all his credibility back after the hurricanes hit. He was slow to get the FEMA was slow getting its act together down there, and he was slow to come down there. And it took further hits now of the CIA spying on American citizens, BS. Now it's even getting worse with the report that the CIA is actually testing the air around mosques and places like that. So I think he's the Person of the Year for good or bad. Business-wise, Person of the Year is Steve Jobs from Apple for creating the iPod, which I think has revolutionized the broadcasting business as we know it today. Now, if you look on any of these podcast directories, you see all the mainstream programs. Rush Limbaugh, O'Reilly, all the radio shows are on there. Yeah, I don't know that, maybe satellite radio, but I think podcasting, iPods really revolutionized everything. They just announced that all these NBC Universal is putting a lot of their programs up on for podcasting, and ABC's jumping on it. So, and the news item from subject to discussion for the year has to be, because I got the most reaction out of it, is that story about that coach licking the wounds of his players. I don't know if I still have it. Oh, here it is. I still happen to have it. From August 4th, this was a teacher reprimanded for licking wounds. Don't forget, this is the state board in Oregon voted to publicly reprimand a Central Lynn High School teacher and football coach for licking the bleeding wounds of several student athletes. The teacher's name is Scott Reed, and he must attend class on risk of bloodborne pathogens. It was within 2 months from August 4th, and he agreed to stipulate facts that included him licking blood from wounds on a track team member's knee, a football player's arm, and a high school student's hand. It's not clear why he licked the wounds. So, I mean, that was the story of the year for me there, and for the program. And a cable news channel of the year, I think, was MSNBC, because they were put on Bill O'Reilly's enemies list, which I thought was ridiculous. But I like their programs. I like Olbermann's Countdown, and I like the feel of their shows. They don't really preach down to you too much, and it's more of a younger feeling news channel than the others. Then, especially the whole year, they're now Fox News Channel, which is seems like it preaches down to everybody that's watching their channel. And see, the most overblown news story of the year, it's a tie, I think, with Natalie Holloway. And then the Pope's death, I think, was way overblown. I mean, the guy was old, he was sick and everything. And then watching him decay on worldwide TV was, amazing. As a matter of fact, we had Katie Sackhoff on that week, and she mentioned it as well. That it was kind of gross looking. The cameras kept zooming in on the dead Pope, and we're watching his body decay. I mean, it was crazy. And, of course, TV show of the year has to be my favorite, Battlestar Galactica. First of all, it outlasted the original and been consistently good since it started. The program is, it included more characters into the storylines, but the show, I think, is still as good as it was when it first started as a miniseries. So that's what I think. And sports-wise, Person of the Year is Ozzie Guillen, who led my Chicago White Sox to their first World Series in 88 years. I'm wearing one of the shirts my sister got me for Christmas from the parade, so I thank her for that. And, yeah, what else? And also, Interview of the Year for the program, I think, has to go to Katie Sackhoff, because that was the most podcasted program I've had on this program since it started. I think it's like 1,000 in 1 week or something like that. It was amazing. And just the reaction and everybody in the chat room, everything to the interview with Katie Sackhoff. So she was the Person of the Year, I think, Interview of the Year for the program. So then we'll move on to news to me a little bit. Actually, just now we just had the story break on Yahoo News that the Dunkin' Donuts ad actor dies. The guy that kept saying it's time to make the donuts, he passed away. He was 83 years old. He died Saturday in New York City of complications from diabetes, according to his son-in-law. So he was named Fred the Baker, and the commercials lasted 15 years until he retired in 1997. So, wow. Still, it's pretty famous. The guy, time to make the donuts with the bad mustache and everything. So, and also today we had the report on Fox News saying about a third of the money raised for tsunami aid has been misspent. The UN demanded control over the recovery after the tsunami, and now a third of the money has been misspent, miraculously, you know what I mean? And I remember saying this probably lead in 06 to Kofi Annan stepping down and getting out of there, because how many scandals can this guy survive through? First of all, he had the oil for money. Now he has this the money getting misspent for the tsunami aid. So, and then, of course, Monday was the anniversary of the tsunami, killing over 250,000, leaving millions without homes. So, and although local economies are quickly recovering, 80% of the 1.8 million people displaced by this disaster still live in tents, plywood barracks, or the homes of family and friends. So, still, it's amazing. I saw it on how they let go of these helium candles, everything to commemorate the occasion, but man, amazing. And also, Monday was the last Monday Night Football on ABC, so the program is moving to ESPN next season. I think Madden's going away. I don't know who's going to be doing the Monday Night Football on ESPN, but maybe Dennis Miller again. So, and then of course Sunday is Christmas, so we went to my family's, and we went to the JW Marriott for the buffet out in Summerlin. It was okay, pretty good, $24 a piece. So, and, you know, I didn't pay for it, of course, but where else? And also the Chicago Bears clinched their division. I got in a bye in the first round of the playoffs, so winning fever is catching in Chicago. First the White Sox, now the Bears. And where else? And then Thursday, and then, you know, Friday and Saturday, I was kind of out of it and really didn't catch any news. But Thursday was the UN Secretary General Kofi Annan. He was questioned about a Mercedes-Benz that his son bought and was shipped with a diplomatic discount and shipped to Africa with part of the oil for food money. So he dressed down the reporter and said the reporter was cheeky and a schoolboy and an embarrassment to himself and his profession. And the United Nations Correspondents Association defended the British reporter, and Kofi Annan kind of backed down a little bit. And on Wednesday, the Senate extended the Patriot Act initially for 6 months, and they changed it. They're only going to extend it for a month now. So, and also on Wednesday, I found it interesting. I like that Miller Lite commercial they've been running with the house with the lights twinkling on and off to the music. So I thought that was pretty cool. So, and anyway, we'll move on to the news to you. Let me see here. Let me move some of this stuff over. And this is from today. Milwaukee police, they seek mob that beat driver. At least 15 young people dragged a motorist out of his car and kicked and punched him after he honked his horn to get them to move out of the street. The 50-year-old man was in critical condition with head injuries Tuesday. It was unclear whether he would survive. The police spokeswoman, Ann Schwartz, said that the man was driving alone on the city's north side late Monday when he honked at the group of young people about 16 to 23 years old in the middle of the street to get them out of the hell out of their way. They surrounded the vehicle and attacked the man. A witness told police that one of the attackers climbed on top of the car, jumped, and landed, the roof of the car collapsed, and they landed on the victim's head. And they left him for dead, and they when the police showed up, he was lying in the street. So, amazing. Amazing. 15 of them, you know, just because the guy honked to get these people out of the way. Ridiculous. Milwaukee, I don't know. I mean, I used to go to Milwaukee when I was a kid, so I didn't think it was such a bad town. But, man, it's with these kids. You know, honk, get the hell out of the way, you know. And this is also from today as well. LAPD plans to recruit at gay games in Chicago. When the gay games open in Chicago next summer, the Los Angeles Police Department will be in town looking for a few good recruits. Man, what, I don't know. The department's aggressive strategy to fill 400 newly created jobs will include offering a written test, blah, blah, blah. So now all the gay games are going to be in Chicago. The LAPD is going to be there recruiting for new officers to join the LA police force in Los Angeles. So I don't know. Like, why not? You know, I guess they have gays in the LAPD. You know, why not? And this is also from today. Baseball's Jeff Reardon was charged with robbing jeweler. Retired star reliever blames actions on medication. Jeff Reardon, one of the top relief pitchers in history, was charged with robbing a jewelry store, then blames his arrest on medication he was taking for depression. The 50-year-old Reardon, retired since 1994 and sixth in career save, walked into a Hamilton Jewelers in the Gardens Mall on Monday and handed an employee a note saying he had a gun and the store is being robbed. Reardon, he was on the Expos, the Twins, and the Red Sox. And I think the Braves, too. It doesn't say in here, but I believe I saw him in the Freeland Braves. And he left the store with some cash, and the police found him in a nearby restaurant and recovered his stolen money and charged him with armed robbery. So, of course, he's saying that, Lieutenant Dave O'Neill said that Reardon said that it was the medication that made him do it, and that he was sorry. So, okay, he was sorry after he was eating his dinner in the restaurant, and then he returned into cash then. I don't know. He said Reardon has lived in the city for more than 20 years and never caused any problems. So he's the one, he had a 20-year-old son who died of a drug overdose in February 2004. So it's been very difficult for him and his family. He just underwent a heart angioplasty last week. So I guess they gave him the okay to rob this jewelry store. I don't know. And this next one is also from today. A teen gang member dies after getting punished. This is from Illinois. Police in Waukegan say two teenagers beat a fellow gang member to death after he broke a gang rule. Lake County Coroner Richard Keller says 16-year-old Dontrell Bell of Waukegan died as a result of blunt force trauma to the chest. Let me see. He was taken to the hospital by gang members. Apparently, two 16-year-old gang members are charged with first-degree murder and are being held at a juvenile facility on $1 million bond. And the police are searching for another suspect. A 27-year-old man is being accused of ordering the beating during a gang meeting at his home. So, man, that's nice. Nice Christmas gift to the kid's family. I don't want him to get killed. It's also, this is from Saturday. Divorced dad admits poisoning kids. This is from Twin Falls, Idaho. A man accused of using poison to kill his three young children told police he didn't want the kids to suffer through the divorce, according to court papers. Jim Jr. Nice was charged Thursday with three counts of first-degree murder. He was ordered held without bail pending a preliminary hearing. He admitted to the killings after he was taken into custody and appeared despondent over his recent divorce. So, fatally poisoned were 6-year-old twins, Justin and Spencer, and a 2-year-old girl, Raquel Anna. So, he didn't want the kids to suffer through a divorce, so he killed them. So, oh, man. The police discovered the children's bodies Wednesday morning after someone called the department to request the officers check on Jim Nice, who had failed to show up for work. Jim Nice answered the door when the officers knocked. He said he was okay. Then the man hung his head and put his hand over his mouth and shook his head, said no, replied, no, I'm not okay. And he opened the door and fell to the ground. And police spotted three bodies laying on the living room floor. So, amazing. Amazing. And this next one's from Monday about a request to convert oil rigs into reefs. Triple. Damage to offshore oil and gas platforms from Hurricanes Katrina and Rita has tripled the number of requests to convert rigs into artificial reefs in the Gulf of Mexico. So this is because they want to knock the oil platforms over to create more of artificial reefs for the area there, for the water coming in. So that's what they got more. Usually get between 10 and 12 requests each year. But now, since after the hurricanes, they've gotten more. So they said so far to date, 144 oil rigs have been used as reefs. So in this year's hurricanes, damaged an area 166 rigs. So, but I don't know, why not? If it stops these hurricanes, why not let them turn them all into reefs? This next one is from today. Mother runs over daughter, 6 years old, in driveway. Tragedy. No charges are expected. This is from Sheboygan, Wisconsin. A mother backing out of a driveway to get candy on Christmas Eve accidentally ran over her 6-year-old daughter and killed her. When officers arrived shortly before midnight on Christmas Eve, they found Maribel Alvarez seriously injured. She was taken to a hospital where she died. The family was at the family's friend's house visiting for the holiday. She decided to go get some candy, and then she didn't realize the kid was there, and she backed over her and killed her. Man, that becomes something at Christmas. Horrible. Horrible. How can she not know the kid's out of the house? You know, it looked like that should be, you see her walking, running out of the house. I don't know. This next one is a weird one. A woman swallows a cell phone after argument. It's from Blue Springs, Maryland. It was a conversation stopper. A lover's dispute over a cell phone took a serious turn early Friday morning when the woman ended the spat by swallowing the phone whole. Police say they received a call at 4:52 a.m., probably from the phone itself, I don't know, from her stomach, from a man who said his girlfriend was having trouble breathing. When they arrived at the house, they found a 24-year-old woman had a cell phone lodged in her throat. He wanted the phone, and she wouldn't give it to him, so she attempted to swallow it. She just put the whole phone in her mouth so he couldn't get it. What the hell? She just threw it out the window. Why the hell you swallow a damn phone? Police said an ambulance transported a woman to St. Mary's Medical Hospital Center in Blue Springs. She won't give details about the woman's health. I mean, I wonder if she had roaming on that cell phone when she swallowed it. This is the first time they've heard anything's happening. The police didn't know what kind of phone it was. They don't even know if it was on ring or vibrate. I don't know. I thought this was ridiculous. This one from Friday. Judge lets man change name to Jesus Christ. A Manhattan man's holiday spirit soared to celestial heights Friday when a judge gave him permission to change his name to Jesus Christ. Jose Luis Espinal, 42, of Washington Heights, he was happy and grateful that the judge approved the name change. Espinal said he was moved to seek the name change about a year ago when it dawned on him, I am the person that is that name. So he thinks he is Jesus Christ. Espinal acted as his own lawyer and got the change approved by some idiot. Manhattan civil judge Diane Lebanoff said she was satisfied with this application is neither novel nor would granting it pose practical problems. The judge says name change applications usually are not denied because the change might cause practical difficulties or be thought unwise. So I don't know. She cited a 2001 Utah case in which a man legally changed his name to Santa Claus, and a and a Washington, D.C. case earlier this year in which a name change applicant obtained a driver's license and Social Security card in the name of Jesus Christ. So, oh, man. So he lives. Jesus Christ lives on in all of us. No, he's in Manhattan. His last name used to be Espinal. So now if you see him, he's Jesus Christ. Anyway, this is from Friday. About the New York Times, about the NSA spying is broader than President Bush admitted. This is this damn story. I think it's going to blow up next year. The National Security Agency has conducted much broader surveillance of emails and phone calls without court orders than the Bush administration has acknowledged, the New York Times reported on its website. Boy, they're really nailing the Bush administration. The New York Times is letting them have it. I mean, they keep blowing these stories wide open. The NSA, with help from American telecommunications companies, obtained access to streams of domestic and international communications, said the Times in the report late Friday. The story did not name the companies. Since the Times disclosed the domestic spying program last week, President Bush has stressed that his executive order allowing the eavesdropping was limited to people with known links to Al-Qaeda. But the Times said that the NSA technicians have combed through large volumes of phone and internet traffic in search of patterns that might lead to terrorists. The volume of information harvested from telecommunications data and voice networks without court-approved warrants is much larger than the White House has acknowledged, the paper said, quoting an unnamed official. The story quoted a former technology manager at a major telecommunications firm saying that companies have been storing information on calling patterns since the 9/11 attacks and giving it to the federal government. Wow. Neither the manager nor the company he worked for was identified. This is amazing. So since 9/11, they've been stockpiling all this information and giving it to the Bush administration for what? Sifting through us dropping the word Al-Qaeda or Al Jazeera on our phone conversations or emails? I mean, this is ridiculous. Oh, man. I mean, who does he think he is? I mean, you know, if this was Clinton, they'd be dragging him out of the White House and tar and feathering him, you know? So I'm going to talk about this more with Justin when he comes on in just a few minutes. The singer, this is from Friday, singer Don Ho. Oh, I thought that was what happened to the music. Singer Don Ho says procedure saved him. Legendary Hawaiian crooner Don Ho said he could barely walk, let alone sing, and would have been a goner without an experimental stem cell procedure on his ailing heart earlier this month in Thailand. Don Ho, known for his signature tune, Tiny Bubbles, there we go, I could sing the whole song if I wanted to, said he hopes to return to the stage soon. The 75-year-old singer underwent a new treatment that has not been approved in the United States. It involves multiplying stem cells taken from his blood and injecting them into his heart in hopes of strengthening it. It was his last hope, said Don Ho, who suffers from non-schematic cardiomyopathy, a weakened heart muscle not due to blockages in the coronary arteries. So I guess it's just a weakened heart muscle. There's nothing wrong with it. But they're hoping the stem cells will make the heart stronger and so he can get real revitalized. The experimental procedure he underwent was developed by a company in Thailand and with laboratories in Israel where Ho's stem cells were sent to be multiplied. So I hope so. He never did come to Vegas for his Christmas show. Usually every year he comes to Vegas with his daughter. I think her name is Ho-Ho, but no. Usually comes to town and does a Christmas show out of the Orleans Casino, but this year he did not appear. So we were just stuck with the Wayne Newton Christmas special. So... And it's also from Friday, NBC acquires majority stake in MSNBC. NBC is acquiring a majority stake in MSNBC from Microsoft Corporation, giving NBC greater control over the struggling all-news cable channel and further scaling back the software giant's media ambitions. Of course, NBC is part of GE, will wind up with 82% of the cable network. And Microsoft and NBC will continue to jointly own MSNBC, which is the number one news website in the world. So I hope so. I like the programs. As I said, I like it a lot better than Fox News. So I hope NBC does better with MSNBC without having Microsoft dragging them down with them. So I hope so. And this is from Thursday. Twins found abandoned in Chicago church. Babies listed in good condition. This is on Thursday from Chicago. Two newborn babies were found inside a church in Chicago on Wednesday, prompting those involved to call it a Christmas miracle. Officials said the boy and girl were found in a single child care seat in a inside stairway at North Austin Lutheran Church. That area is kind of iffy right now. At about 8:30 a.m., by a church custodian reported on WMAQ, which is NBC affiliates. MAQ initials, I'm not sure what they stand for. I know WLS is World's Largest Store out of for Sears. WGN is World's Greatest Newspaper for the Tribune. I'm not sure what WMAQ is. I forgot now. We make, I don't know, maybe Merchandise Mart? I'm not sure. The custodian said he's going upstairs to take the turkey up there, and he saw the car seat sitting over there, and one of the babies, like, lashed out as to say, "We are over there." So that's the it's the custodian talking about the baby. The babies were transported to West Suburban Hospital, where they were listed in good condition. The twins were named Baby Mary and Baby Joseph by the staff of West Suburban Medical Center in Oak Park. Hey, wait a minute. I was born in Oak Park. I mean, I don't remember a hospital like that. Oak Park. I was born in Oak Park Hospital in Chicago. The boy and the girl were the first set of twins abandoned and found together in the city of Chicago. The state's safe haven law, the Abandoned Newborn Protection Act, which allows mothers or parents to safely and legally and anonymously drop off a child if the infant is 72 years old or younger. The law specifies that the babies be left at a staffed police station, firehouse, hospital, or emergency medical facility. So we don't know. Does the church count as that? No, I don't see. I don't think so. It doesn't see. I don't see a church or anything counted in here. So, and this is a follow-up to that story I had last week with the body parts bit being stolen. This is amazing. The bones of late British broadcasting legend Alistair Cook, who used to host Masterpiece Theater on PBS, were stolen by a crime ring that snatched body parts to sell for transplant procedures, according to reports in two New York newspapers on Thursday. Now, where is this story at? You know, citing sources close to investigation by the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office, the Daily News said that Alistair Cook's bones were snatched before his cremation and sold for more than $7,000 to two tissue processing companies. It quoted Cook's daughter saying if she had learned of the theft last week, she was shocked and saddened by it. Cook, of course, he used Masterpiece Peter, blah, blah. He died in March 2004 from lung cancer. He was 95 years old. The use of a cancerous bone for transplant violates the FDA regulations, and using body parts from the elderly is also against transplant protocol. This is another one. Now, the one before, he said the father had, the father was cremated, and he also had cancer. Now we got a famous person who happened to him, Alistair Cook. I mean, what the hell? I mean, Paul Zahn broke this story wide open. Now they're all starting to get in on it with now Alistair Cook. So, but anyway, I think we're ready for Justin from the Dunkelvent. We've got the sound effect. We'll bring him on. I'm going to try to be a little more timelier with the program this week. So, there you go. There you go. What happened? We lost him? Oh, Justin, if you're there, please call back. I think the donkey knocked over the phone thing here. But anyway, I mean, it's amazing about this, people selling these bones, body parts and all that, and they're damn, and the Alistair Cooks, he had cancer, and they're, you know, stealing them, snatching them to sell for transplant procedures. I mean, especially doing blood tissue or, you know, things like that, and it's, you know, the poor guy died of cancer, and they're putting cancerous parts on other people. I mean, it's amazing. Yeah, I'd be suing if I was surviving. I'd be suing the hell out of somebody. Somebody's got to be sued, you know. And this other one I saw from Wednesday, I got a couple other things, but this is amazing. I didn't see this one either. You know, where is the news on these stories? You know what I mean? They cover all this, you know, blonde of the month business. HIV positive woman raped boy, police say on Wednesday. This is from Avoca, Arkansas. Authorities say 13-year-old Arkansas boy was exposed to HIV when he was allegedly raped by a 42-year-old woman in his home. When the police arrived, they found two men arguing with a woman named Donna Sue Mars. However, during the subsequent interviews, police said that one of the men said that Mars had sex with his 13-year-old son. She confirmed that the boy, that she forced him to have oral sex, and they discovered later that she is infected with HIV, and it is a crime for somebody infected with the virus to expose someone else knowingly. The age difference is enough to charge her with rape. The woman was indicating that the juvenile was a consenting member, but the boy said no, that she somewhat forced herself on him. The police said that the woman was charged with rape and exposing another person HIV, which is also a felony. If convicted, she should get a life sentence. She should get a life sentence. I mean, you got HIV, and then here's a woman's raping a 13-year-old boy, exposing him to HIV. I mean, man, oh, man. So, anyway, I think Justin's back on from the Dunkelvin. There you go. Should we... Is he on? Oh, there he is. There you go. And Justin from the Dunk Event, are you there, sir?
Sean, are there you there? Go.
Happy New Year.
Happy, yeah, sure.
Happy Festivus.
Happy, yeah, exactly.
There you go.
For the rest of us.
Happy Festivus. Yeah, you watch that Seinfeld episode?
Oh, of course. It's a classic.
Yeah, yeah, and with the aluminum aluminum pole and all that.
Yeah, just the what was it, the holiday pole?
Holiday pole, and then
the
then the test of strength. You got to wrestle down the head of the family, and then air your grievances with whoever pissed you off in the previous year.
I love it. I love it. I think that's what I honestly believe that that's what O'Reilly should be championing. You know?
Festivus.
Festivus, instead of all this these religious holidays. Let's go with the one that came from a sitcom.
Yeah, well, I mean, he went berserk over this Christmas business. Then it ended up backfiring when I found out that Fox News was doing the same thing with its holiday website there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, because
I mean, holiday is such a demeaning word, I think, really, because it's taking the true spirit of Christmas out of Christmas. I mean, because of all of the buying of presents, and that's really the spirit of Christmas, I think. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of an agnostic, but I mean, I do believe there was a Jesus Christ, and that's whose birth we're honoring. So I'm okay with that. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that's just the thing. I mean, there's a lot of evidence, actually, because of the whole, the star thing, that Jesus was actually born in July.
Uh-oh.
So,
uh-oh.
it's one of these things. It's like, you know what, I accept it for what it is. I buy my family presents. They buy me presents. There's kind of a social contract there. We're all happy. You know, we have a nice dinner. And it's just a way, at the end of the year, to kind of just mark, a year well spent.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, I mean, looking back at the year, I mean, of course, what's a handful of the big political stories of the year? You think that Schiavo mess?
Oh, wow. Well, no, I think the biggest story of the year has to be Katrina. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And it set the tone for Bush didn't have a very good year.
No.
This year at all. At first he tried to do the Social Security reform. That didn't work out for him. Then Katrina came around. And just really, really destroyed any hope that he would have to have any type of credibility to push forward legislation this year.
Yeah.
Which I don't think he really did at all. I mean, it's been kind of a lame duck year for him.
Yeah. As soon as the inauguration was over, I think his ego got ahead of him. I mean, here he is saying, I got all this political capital, and I'm going to spend this political capital, and nothing happened. You know?
Well, I mean, that's the difference between actually having political capital and saying that you have political capital, right? I mean, and here's the thing. I mean, this country is definitely polarized, and you can't. I mean, I can't really look at anybody else who polarized it more than Bush. I mean, you have the blogosphere, you have people in the media, you have the editorials. But at the end of the day, I mean, this is a guy who essentially, now we're finding out, did this wiretap business, went around FISA, thinks that the Constitution gives him pretty much, absolute power over, if it is deemed it will help our security, yet that is pretty much unknowable. I think what would be a really good strategy for Bush right now is to just take a look at what the last 5 years have been, and take a look at how difficult those years have been, and just try to see it from maybe a little bit more of a moderate point of view. Because I don't really think that Bush is a conservative. I think a lot of conservatives would take issue with the idea that Bush is a conservative. I think he's something new and different, and I think
really.
I think he's definitely pulling it much more right than, it's not even right or left. It's like, I'm not exactly sure which way he's pulling it, but he's not very fiscally responsible. You have traditional fiscal conservatives just really upset about that.
Well,
so
yeah,
I think he really needs to take another look at his agenda and see where he can build some unions, where he can build some consensus.
Well, yeah, he had the just last week, and we talked about it on this program, that the Congress voted like $40 billion in spending cuts, yet the administration, they also voted for like $50 billion in tax cuts. So we're not really not saving anything. We're losing money, you know?
Yeah, and you know what's really interesting? One of the top economic advisors in Washington, the economic advisors to Congress, when they talked about the tax cuts, this guy said, no way. And, you know, there's pretty interesting conversation going on over at Donclafont where one of the commenters to somebody left a comment on a post that I posted about this guy, and he said, just don't even think about tax cuts. And one of the comments essentially said that on our present pace, we will balance the budget by 2008. They will just, you know, supply-side economics work, and, you know, the amount of interest that we pay as a percentage of kind of our national debt load is going down, and that has a really, really positive effect on being able to balance the budget and getting tax revenues into the national coffers. I would urge your listeners to go over and look at it because it's really interesting because there's this graph that essentially shows that under Clinton, the debt was the percentage of the debt was going down dramatically. Mm-hmm. But around 2000, it started to not go down as dramatically. Mm-hmm. And then it's pretty much tapered off in the past 2 years. And just last month, it's starting to go back up.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that. Well, I mean, a lot of it is because he had a Democrat in the White House, he had the Republican in the Congress, were kind of like a check and balance. Now the Republicans are running everything, and it's amazing how the parties have like switched roles. I mean, now the Republicans are the spendthrift party, and the Democrats are the ones urging fiscal restraint. You know, it's amazing.
It is kind of weird. I mean,
yeah.
Here's the thing. It's like it feels like it's so. I think the reason why the Democrats have issue with it, especially things like the Medicare or the Medicaid prescription drug program, is because we didn't use our power as one of the most powerful nation on earth to leverage our spending power so that we could lower the cost of the drugs that we get from the prescription drug companies. I mean, if we're going to be buying these things in bulk. You know, it makes sense that we leverage our spending power, and that's a basic tenet of capitalism, right? Mm-hmm. And we just didn't do it, and now a lot of Republicans and that prescription drug program is you know, the costs are just going crazy through the roof.
Yeah,
and a lot of fiscal Republicans who voted for this look back and say that that's one of the most embarrassing votes that they have cast. You know, this is what they're saying in private. Mm-hmm. And I think that it just feels odd. It doesn't feel right. It feels like there needs to be more of a moderate voice in politics today is what
absolutely.
It feels like.
Well, that's right.
It needs to be more of an independent voice.
That's right. I got to plug your site. I'm sorry. It's Justin from the Donclafont blog as well as the Moderate Voice blog, which I guess I shall name the Moderate Voice as the blog of the year, I guess, to me. No offense to you, Justin, but Joe's been around. You know, it just you're on the blog, the Moderate Voice now too.
I blog over there, and
yours,
Donclafont's only been around for 5 months.
Well, yours,
next year I will expect you to. Name us as the subject of discussion blog of the year.
If the program's still on, you mean.
I'm coming to Las Vegas. The Moderate Voice is awesome. And I think I honestly think that's going to be one of the new big blogs.
Absolutely.
To emerge out of this kind of like this political, you know, catfight. I mean, it's just, it's been nasty. It's been rhetoric, people calling each other liars and all this other stuff. And you know what? I was guilty of it, and you know I stopped it because it just I realized that I was trying to change things, and it wasn't changing anything.
Yeah.
It was just making it worse.
Well, I mean, Joe, I mean, the same thing with this program. Joe's blog evolved over the year from a straight political blog into more of a like a magazine type of a blog, and he talks about the things, not just politics, news, and
other
things.
I mean, like, and he urges all of the posters. I mean, he One great thing about Joe, and the really great thing about having a politically agnostic blog, essentially, right?
Wow, that's a new term, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's fitting for the moderate voice, because I mean, you do have I think, you do have a lot of people who, most people would say, okay, that person has more liberal values, but the thing about it is that we're not tied into the idea that we have to be like a daily cause. We're not tied in to the idea that we have to be, you know, if we were on the right, that we have to be like a little green footballs, you know. Mm-hmm. We can post whatever we want, and it's really refreshing,
yeah.
Right? And it's really refreshing just to be free like that, to have the ability. Like if I want, I posted a video of this British guy who thought he was like Eminem, it was about a week ago, and it was hilarious. And you know, I don't know that I would necessarily be able to do that on something that was a little bit more, wasn't as free. And I think that freedom, I think people are going to respond to that freedom, much like they're, you know, they're responding to, like, your podcast. You know, it's much more like a magazine feel. It's not just about one thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, I was getting sick of that. And, you know, the listeners were sick of all the straight politics. And I thought, you know, lighten it up a little bit. But anyway, and what other big stories we had? Of course, we had Schiavo, the whole mess over Schiavo.
That was pretty ridiculous, and
yes.
I think that turned a lot of conservatives off, a lot of independents off.
Absolutely.
A lot of big political stories basically were either around the war on terror or you know your
life and
your
death,
kind of basic cultural values. Harriet Myers actually I think was a big story too. I mean, I don't think anybody really expected the right-wing blogosphere to respond the way that it did. And, you know, I'll have to say, it was always really interesting to me to see it later on characterized by the Democratic leadership as the conservative blogosphere saying that Harriet Myers wasn't...
Conservative enough.
Uh-huh. I think that there definitely were hints that she wasn't so... so concerned with overturning Roe v. Wade, and I think that definitely did kind of tweak the Hugh Hewitts of the world and the power lines.
Yeah.
But for the most part, what I was reading is that just from the very start that this person just was not qualified, and that's what I felt from the very start when I started reading about this woman. And you know, not to say that she isn't a good lawyer, not to say that, you know, she doesn't have accolades. But it just didn't feel like she had the resume and the breadth of knowledge that somebody needs to become a Supreme Court justice. So I thought that was really interesting. There was quite a bit of fallout, you know, from
Harriet Myers. Oh yes,
right. Yeah, from the right and from independents, you know, over Harriet Myers for Bush. So it was Bush just got beat up this year.
Yeah,
and
well,
I think that he has a chance in this next year to build coalitions to make make peace with some of the people that he's pissed off, and also try to find maybe just a little bit more of a middle ground. You know, it's been really frustrating these past 5 years to note the language, to note the rhetoric. You know, I think a lot of the stuff that we're seeing now is also I think that there are a lot of people who use rhetoric by default, and that's just kind of their mode of communication. And I think the blogosphere sometimes can definitely suffer from that.
Yeah. What about the what about Howard Dean being appointed to the chairman of the Democratic National Committee?
Exactly. I mean, that's I mean, he's, you know, here's the thing. They cover the stuff that is very what I want to say is very provocative, and they don't cover the stuff that makes more sense. But the stuff that Dean has said that is provocative, it's just ridiculous, and I think it does speak to this idea that a lot of this is a response to the type of rhetoric that is coming from, you know, our leadership. You know, I mean, you have and then it kind of trickles down into the public. It you know, our national psyche. And we feel like we have to pick sides, but I'm here to say that you don't. You don't have to pick sides. You don't have to. You know, you don't have to think that all Republicans are, you know, evil. You don't have to think that all Democrats are just, you know, hippie, you know, wannabe, you know, war haters.
No.
I mean, that's not the case. And you'll find that there is a vast moderate majority out there in the country that just want the facts. They just want,
exactly,
you know, people to talk straight to them.
Exactly. Like Howard Dean, like I said, I've always been a Democrat, and I don't like that they made him the chairman of the party because he's got this foot-in-the-mouth disease, and the man, he's like Jesse Jackson. He's a moth to a damn spotlight. You know what I mean? You need somebody else in that spot. And I think now that the guy's, you know, ever since he did this, he's been kind of laying low. I hope that the powers that be and the fathers of the Democratic Party are going to show him the door. Like I've suggested that they get some kind of funder to fund his own like national radio show, and then that's his, you know, face saving way out for him is to get his own radio show and go off and do that while he gets somebody else to run the party. You know?
Yeah, I just don't know what to really do with Howard. I mean, here's the thing. I really don't think it was Howard Dean. I think it was Joe Trippi. I think Joe Trippi figured something out too early, And even in Joe Trippi's book that he talked about Howard Dean essentially, you know, telling him at one point, you know, you figured something out that you shouldn't have figured out. I'm not ready for this. I'm paraphrasing horribly right with that. But I think essentially Dean wasn't ready.
Yeah.
And I think it showed.
Yeah.
And I think it's showing more. As we hear these types of things that he says, you know, it's like every 3 months, you know, that he says something ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's just there's not really any need for it. You know, you don't need to pump up your funders.
Yeah.
With this type of nonsense, you just don't need to do it.
No,
you know? And,
well, it's like I said. He instead of doing this foot in the mouth disease he's got, or as I say on my blog, diarrhea of the mouth, he's got to put proposals together for the party. I mean, you can be anti-Republican all you want, but yeah, come up with counter proposals. Like even with me, this thing with the Iraq. I said, you know, why don't we pull our troops out to the border, you know, and let the Iraqis take care of the interior, or give them shares of the oil profits, you know, things like that. If you're a Democrat, you can't be anti-Bush without having your own ideas, you know.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the Republicans. This is kind of the crazy thing about the whole Democratic leadership, and I think it shows why they're Democrats right now are not a party of ideas. Regardless of like, you know, what types of things that they'll trot out. And hey, listen, fair enough, because they're the minority right now, and they're not really able to like push through a ton of legislation that's you know, earth shattering, right?
Yeah.
But come 2006, right? Once the clock turns.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't start having some ideas, I think I wonder if you know, one of these more moderate politicians could break off and really have a shot at, like, you know, running an independent campaign. It might seem far fetched, but I'm sure it seemed far fetched back in the
Perot days,
you know,
huh?
Yeah, back in the Perot days.
Well, it's got to be somebody with cash, like Mark Warner. He's got money to do it. You know, somebody.
Right. Well, I don't think Warner's going to stick with the whole
Democratic Party.
Democratic apparatus.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be somebody like that. I actually think it's going to be somebody on the other side of the aisle.
Oh, really? Like McCain or Hagel?
Hagel, possibly.
Yeah.
That could be interesting.
Powell.
I you know what? I think Powell is completely disinterested in it. I could be dead wrong, but he's. People have urged him to run for president before, and I think he's just sick of the whole thing. I think that he got burned by being loyal to the president, and you know, but I do respect it. I mean, you know, it's not like he's bashing Bush, you know, on every occasion that he gets. I mean, sometimes he says, "Oh no, I disagree with that." Sometimes he says, "No, I agree with that," and he gets a lot of flack. But you know, I respect that.
Yeah.
I respect the fact that, you know, he's able to say, you know what, that decision wasn't right. This decision, that is right.
Yeah.
And now, you know, and that's a valuable thing. That's what we need. Those are more of the types of conversations that we need to be having. But we feel since there's so much rhetoric, we have to feel this. We feel that we're insulated and we can't agree with anything from the other side. And that's it's extremely damaging.
Well, I mean, it's like I've said. I mean, you know. you know, you're either liberal or conservative, but can we come like middle road with what's right for the country? Yeah, it may not be right for the Democrats or Republicans, but it's right for the country. If you can kind of focus in on that, maybe we can accomplish some things in this country, like improving the education standards of these legions of idiots in our schools and all this stuff, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I education is the most important issue. I know a lot of people will say, you know, it's the war on terrorism, and I understand why, but I honestly think for the future of our country, education, for the long, long, long-term future of our country, education is the most important, important issue. And, you know, we're going to prosecute the war on terrorism, a war on a tactic. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish it was a little bit more focused on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, that will take care of itself. You know, we're making the we're making strides in that. You know, we're getting into these, you know, these terrorist nests, and we're essentially making it very hard for these people to do business.
Yeah.
And I think even though I've heard reports that there are more terrorists
created.
Yeah, I guess created. Yeah, I guess that would be. That just seems kind of odd. But I still think that eventually that whole apparatus is going to be shut down. To a point where they're marginalized.
Mm.
But for the future of this country, man, these kids need to get smarter.
Absolutely.
Like our education system needs a major reform.
Yeah.
And I also think in order for kids to have an environment where they can feel like they can learn, you also need to take care of the health of the nation as well. And I think healthcare is an extremely important issue too.
Yeah, healthcare and education.
Healthcare and education. Mm-hmm. I mean, it comes down to the intellectual health of a nation and the actual physical health of the nation.
Absolutely. Now looking at going into just a few minutes left.
Ahead.
Now looking at 06, what's the story you think is going to have the most impact on next year? Do you think it's the spy business?
Business is big.
Or is it Iraq?
This is a big deal. Iraq, I think, is going to become. I think the focus on Iraq is going to stay fairly constant.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's going to be both bad news and good news.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that seems really, really broad, but let me dig into that a little bit more. I think the cry for all of the good news, like a lot of the right wing blogosphere has said, you know, we want to see more good news, and I think that's going to be reported. I think what's going to happen is that the media is going to essentially respond to these requests and give, you know, and report more good news.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that there is going to be, there's going to be some bad news. You're going to have these stories that keep coming out about these insurgent strongholds that, you know, that parts of Iraq are just, you know, off limits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no reporter can go there. The army can't really secure it. These insurgents keep popping up. And until we truly control the borders in that country, and I think until we, I think that we should up troop strength over there. I don't think that we're going to be able to win the peace.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be another. It's basically going to be like, how are we going to win the peace? I know Bush, like, you know, put a plan out there, but it was pretty much the same plan as before. How are we going to win the peace? That's going to be a story in 2006. Alito is going to be a big story right off the bat because I think his confirmation hearing is in January.
Yeah,
if I'm not correct. And he's been, more documents have come out about, you know, his feelings about presidential power, and here's the thing, it comes down to a decision of what you're going to feel, how you feel about something that he wrote in the 80s, and it's tricky. I'm not saying it isn't. What he wrote, frankly, it kind of concerns me, because when he was applying for that job in the 80s, he was, he was well into his 30s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, your ideology is fairly set, you know? And he's kind of demonstrated that he's conservative.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? And I'm not saying that he isn't fair, but he's a conservative judge, and I think that that's going to definitely be a story.
Well, he seems like he's going to be more, he's vowed that he'll stick close to the Constitution. But I don't know, my thing, I think the story it's going to affect most of next year is going to be the spy business, because, you know, the Democrats are pounding the impeachment drum and everything else. I mean, especially now, it's a lot broader than they thought. Now that whole thing with the testing the air around the mosques and everything here in the United States for nuclear weapons and all that, or nuclear material, it's like, oh, man. I mean, it seems like it's like the intelligence business here in the United States has been running amok, you know?
Well, you know, I got to say, I'm not really that opposed to the whole testing air around mosques. Mm-hmm. If, you know, once they start breaking into mosques, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's when I have a problem. But testing the air around it, I mean, you know, if we're going to be honest about the whole terrorism business, it's not like, you know, these are, you know, Irish terrorists, right? These are Islamic extremists, and where they will probably find shelter is places where Islam is the religion. I mean, that's, you know, going to a mosque is maybe a little bit too obvious,
mm-hmm.
but I don't really have a problem with that necessarily. What I have a problem with is the idea that the government feels they can just tap into anybody's phone conversation or anybody's email account and listen in and look. I think the problem is it scares a lot of people. It scares people that that they don't have any privacy.
Exactly.
And I think that there's going to be a discussion next year. I hope that there's a discussion next year about this whole idea that, you know, there are some people who are going to be totally okay with it. Denise on our blog says that she's okay with it. She's glad that this type of stuff has happened.
Mm.
But I think that there needs to be a distinction made between the right to privacy and the right to be assured that your government just isn't just, you know, coming into your life like that.
Yeah.
You know, that you think that, you know, that you have a reasonable expectation of your government to not just go insert themselves into your life.
Absolutely.
Frankly, I don't think that the Constitution grants the president those types of powers.
I agree. Well, Justin, with that, we're going to let you go. We're at the end of our first hour. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Drive safely.
As well.
We'll talk to you next week.
Have a good one.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Justin from the Dunkelvent blog with our political discussion, and we thank him. It's been quite a year. We thank him for being a weekly contributor to the program. And up next, in just a few minutes, will be DJ Radiohead from the blogcritics.org website. And then we'll be back, and hopefully we'll have a nice little discussion of year-end in music and some other things in the pop culture world. And so I'll be back in just a couple minutes. Thank you very much, and stay tuned.
something inside.
And welcome back to the second hour of Subject to Discussion. It's the New Year's edition of the program. Last week we had the Christmas edition. This is the New Year's edition of the program. And I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. Call me anything you want. Just don't call me late for dinner and don't call me Baby New Year either. And we had a great first hour. We're talking about the year-end review of the news and politics and everything in between. And now we'll be joined by DJ Rayohead from blogcritics.org. DJ, you there, sir?
I am here, Sean. How you doing?
Hi, fine. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I say it's been I've gotten so far all positive responses with Blog Critics being a part of the program. So I thank you all very much for being a positive addition to the program.
Well, I've been paying some people off to say nice things about my performance here tonight, too.
I'm sure everybody's done fine. Everybody's got a little different take on things, which is, you're all not the same people, and everybody's got their different take. I was reading one of the messages, I think it was when Philip was on there. Oh, they want to compare him to when Eric Olson was on. Well, everybody talked about something different, so, I mean, it's not going to be the same report. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and then now, you say you're going to reveal your first name on the program. Do you want to reveal your first name on the program or no?
Well, you know, there may be a dramatic spiking with this.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. No, you can call me Josh for the duration of this.
Josh, okay. Well, this is like Spoiler City, because during the year I gave away all the Battlestar Galactica spoilers on this program. I gave away Pegasus, who's going to play the Commander Kane. I gave away all that stuff. Yeah, so, yeah, now we spoiled your name. Your first name is Josh. There you go.
One more spoiler before 2005 is closed up. That's good.
Absolutely. Now, you sound like you have a radio voice. Have you been in radio?
Well, actually, yeah, I did. I did some radio in college and just after college, and then I found out it didn't pay very much, so I took the money and ran.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. Well, I mean, radio, I mean, a lot of them do it because they have a love for it. You know, it's like I said, I've been in and out of radio, for 10, 12 years now, regular radio, now internet radio. I mean, it just, once it gets in your blood, it's hard to get it out. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I've started doing my own podcast thing, and it's because, same reason, if it gets in the blood, it just doesn't leave very easily.
Yeah, now, how often do you do your podcast?
Well, that's sort of a running joke on my podcast. It's whenever I get around to it, it has roughly averaged out to twice a month. But there have been large gaps, and I've even started dabbling around in some short videos with it, and they haven't been too big of a disaster. So that's been
cool.
Fun too.
That's cool. Now, do you have an iPod?
Oh yes, I have actually. people who have just heard my recent episode, and I'm not trying to promote myself all over. But I've owned about six of them, and the reason I own the one I own now is because I actually accidentally flushed my last one down the toilet.
Oh! That'll make Steve Jobs happy. He just spiked the sales, you know what I'm saying?
Hey, listen, all of you folks who, have Apple stock and your mutuals and your 401k, you're welcome.
Yeah.
And remember, now that I've revealed my first name, it's Josh. Get that spelled right on, sort of my check. Send
there
some of that action back here.
Dodge, Josh, DJ Rayohead, care of Blog Critics. I think Olson and Wynn will cash those checks for you, won't they?
Oh, they'll cash them for me, whether I see any of the money.
Now, in your, everybody knows, I asked everybody kind of talking points, and you said that you finally saw King Kong. Now, what'd you think about that? That's turned into a pretty big flop. What'd you think of King Kong?
Well, it did, from a commercial standpoint, it edged Narnia out to take the weekend box, and I went and saw it because the wife to whom I'm married wanted to go and see it, and she liked it more than I did.
Really? Yeah, it was 3 hours, and then what's his name? The Big Ape doesn't show up to like a third of the way into the movie. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Now she wanted to go see it. She and I, neither one of us had been big fans of the other 13 King Kong movies, but she fell in love with Lord of the Rings, and so when Peter Jackson attached his name to this, she was interested, and so I went, I went with her and saw it, and, I was never going to enjoy it all that much because the very premise of the whole movie seems a bit preposterous to me, love between the ape and the woman setup just seems a bit, tough, but that said, There are a lot of things to like about the movie. It didn't need to go 3 hours. There were some definite lulls, but, you know, it was pleasant.
Yeah.
I don't want to interject, but producer, I saw it here.
It's a producer, Con. He saw the movie. What'd you think?
And the movie is King Kong, not Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park.
Well,
but no,
I think Steven Spielberg ought to get a, you know, maybe he was an investor, or, you know, maybe he ought to be talking to his lawyers, because that's a good point.
No, look, it's called King Kong. Did you see the 70s version?
Oh, yes. That was much. That
now,
was good.
That was, to me, it was great acting, and it was good storytelling, and you actually, by the end of the movie, you felt sorry for
the big ape.
King Kong.
Yeah.
In this movie,
you don't feel
I could give a rat's ass if he dies. You don't see him get, you don't see him get, like, the confusing look of, where am I?
Yeah.
You would think people would beat on him. You don't get this whole, like, oh, I feel sorry for him. You just, huh. I really thought it sucked, to
really?
Tell the truth. As far as the storytelling,
yeah.
They, like, totally missed the boat on that.
Really? What'd you think, Josh?
I just didn't think it was a story worth telling. I didn't think it was a story worth telling, you know, any of the other 12 times. You know, if you want to find a device to talk about, you know, cruelty to animals, you didn't have to try and throw in a contrived love story between a woman and an ape in there.
Yeah.
And if you want to tell a story about a woman and an ape falling in love, well, I guess they have, I guess there are specialty niche markets for that, you know, but it just, you know, to me.
They really did Jungle Fever, he said. Well, speaking
you know,
exactly. of niche movies, you said your wife's going to go see Brokeback Mountain with your mother. They're going tomorrow to see Brokeback Mountain?
Well, they were planning to.
Ah.
So I'm in Alabama, and we can't find a theater in Alabama that's showing it. So, you know, you do the math there, guys.
Yeah. A little redneck area. I don't think they'd be showing Brokeback Mountain there, huh?
No. My wife wanted to go see it. My mom wanted to go see it.
Oh.
Well, I didn't, and I'm sure now that I've told everybody I'm in Alabama, you know. It has nothing to do with, you know, it being the gay cowboy movie. I've read some reviews, and they say it's a love story, which to me means it's a chick flick without the chicks, and I don't like going to see chick flicks with the chicks and, you know, chick flicks without the chicks. It's kind of, you know, I don't go see those with my wife anyway. So
I'd like to see it's a chick flick. A dick flick?
No, so it's a dick flick. Ah. Not a chick flick.
I'd like to go see Brokeback Mountain if they did the lesbian version with Jessica Simpson and Britney Spears. I'd go see that one.
they
should do the
I'm
sequel.
On that one, too.
How about Broke Beaver Mountain or something like that? They should do the sequel with those two in it. I'd go see that one. But, you know, no, it's gotten reviews. Everybody says it's a good love story. But then again, you know, it's like it plays to women, and then it's not going to be in broad release because of the premise of the movie, you know?
And, you know, it's getting very good reviews.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, all kidding aside, like I said, you know, love story movies are not the type of stories that I like to go see anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's really not the, you know, for me personally, it's not the gay factor.
Yeah.
Nor is it, you know, every critic in the world, well, I shouldn't say every critic. Many, many critics have been very, very kind to the movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one that, when my wife goes and sees it, you know, if she ever finds a theater, you know, in
Alabama, good luck.
In the Southeast showing it, if she really likes it, you know, I may get talked into going and seeing it. But
you
know, while we were at King Kong last night, they rolled 6 previews, and there was only one movie that they trailered that I actually wanted to go see, so I'm kind of picky on the movie end of things anyway.
Yeah, well, actually, now we want to talk about the album of the year. I might get into music a little bit.
You know what, what Brokeback Mountain did?
What?
In its third week?
What?
Or in 3 weeks, even in limited release?
What's that?
It's still limited release. It's only in 217 theaters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost done $8
million. Oh, well. I guess it's. I don't know how much they paid the actors, but you know.
Well, it's pretty good. It's only 217 theaters in the whole U.S.
Well, I don't know. I think 200 of them are in San Francisco, aren't they?
Well, you know, it's kind of like I think you know when you had either Philip or Monsignor Eric Berlin in. You guys were talking about sort of the commercial potential.
Yeah.
And I still think this thing is going to top out somewhere in the $30 million market. I think. The buzz, and in certain well, non-Alabama community,
yeah.
You're going to see some people rush out to see it. But I think because in some circles, well, you know, like the entire state of Alabama, for example, it's not going to find its way into as many southern markets. I think it's got limited commercial mm-hmm. appeal, but I expect it to do reasonably well.
Yeah.
And I like Ang Lee. Like I said, you know.
Yeah, he's good for cinematography and everything. So hopefully. Now we want to move on to the album of the year. What's your album of the year?
My personal punishment is the way I look at the Grammys, some sort of, you know, karmic punishment for all of my sins. You know, this is the time when a lot of people started compiling their best of the year album list, and, you know, the Grammy nominations came out, and I looked at the albums of the year, and there are some atrocious nominees in there.
Yeah, I mean, Late Registration by Kanye West. What the odds are, I think here in Vegas, they have him coming off of the album of the year, huh? What do you think?
Really? I would be surprised for a couple reasons with that. I'll give you who I think's going to win, and then I'll give you who I would pick. Actually, what I would pick didn't get nominated, but the ones that were. They gave it to the Outkast record last year, so they, you know, Grammy kind of dirtied his hands with hip-hop, you know, for probably the next few years is my guess. And I think Kanye West is still a little bit on the controversial side. Then you've got Mariah Carey's Emancipation of Mimi, which it's been, well, it's an atrocious record, but I mean, it sold a bajillion copies, been very successful with the singles on the radio, but the critical segment of the voters, I think, are going to dismiss it as, you know, pretty much as fluff.
Yeah.
McCartney, there will be some people who will want to go with McCartney just because
nostalgia.
It's been a while since he's won anything, and Grammy does like to, you know, reward its geezers.
Yeah.
To me, it comes down to U2 and Gwen Stefani. And if we were doing this time last year when How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb was released, it would have won hands down. But I think the album, even with Bono being named, you know, Person of the Year along with the Gateses, I think that record has lost a little bit of its momentum. It's a good record, but I don't like it as much now as I did when it first came out. I don't think it's had the legs. And then you've got Gwen Stefani, which, you know, I was embarrassed for her with that Holla Back Girl song. I mean, it's like I felt like I was back in high school at a pep rally. But she is the only artist that can, on, you know, one weekend go open for the Rolling Stones with her band No Doubt, and then the next week open for Nelly. She's got this crossover appeal. The news just came out that she and Gavin are expecting their first child, and I think as punishment to me for something I've done in the past, I think Gwen Stefani's going to sneak in album of the year.
Wow. And also, then he had record of the year. He had, what, We Belong Together by Mariah Carey, Feel Good Incorporated by Gorillaz, right?
Yes.
And Boulevard of Broken Dreams by Green Day, Holla Back Girl by Gwen Stefani, and Gold Digger by Kanye West. So record of the year, what do you think?
Well, this one I think is between Gwen and Kanye West, and I think because they're going to take the easy way out and duck Kanye West and the controversy that would come with that, I think that they may give him record of the year as
Kanye West,
you know, because he was nominated for eight, and he's clearly going to do well in the rap hip hop awards, but I think they may give that to him. Or, you know, Holla Back Girl was such a huge hit. I mean, it was everywhere. I could see that one. I could see it winning that award as well.
Really? So you got two in a row for Gwen Stefani there, huh? The album of the year and record of the year, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I may turn out to be wrong on this. I really think the Gold Digger record may also, like I said, it wouldn't surprise me at all if that's where they make it up to Kanye that they're not going to give him album of the year.
Very cool. And then you have song of the year. You have Bless the Broken Road by Rascal Flatts, Devils and Dust by Bruce Springsteen, Ordinary People by John Legend, Sometimes You Can't Make It on Your Own with U2, and We Belong Together by Mariah Carey. Oh, boy, what do you think?
Well, this one I think is going to be an interesting one. I've heard this category described as, you know, this is a song that's going to be played at everybody's wedding for the rest of the year. So while,
which one's
if
that?
There was any justice, Bruce Springsteen's Devils and Dust would win this award, I think you can pretty much well, that's not going to be played at a lot of weddings.
Mm.
U2 has done well in this category in the past. Mm. Sometimes You Can't Make It on Your Own is a song Bono wrote about his father passing.
Oh.
This could also be, you know, Mariah's nominated 8 times. This could kind of be, you know, her top award, and then she'll do well in some of the pops. But I'm pulling for Springsteen or U2, but I'm predicting a Mariah Carey win.
Really?
And, you know, I hope I'm wrong on that because, I mean,
Mariah Carey, she's good to look at, but yeah, I don't know about her voice, though. And then you have Best Rock Album, X and Y by Coldplay, In Your Honor by the Foo Fighters, A Bigger Bang by the Rolling Stones, How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb by U2, and Prairie Wind by Neil Young, huh?
Yeah, the Neil Young nod there. You know, you talk about the geriatric crowd. Yeah. I mean, even U2, they're in their early, mid-40s, and they're still making, you know, valid, terrific records. But, you know, Neil Young and the Stones being in there. A word of support. I like the Stones record. It was too long. It's a good record. They're not going to win. U2's going to win this one since they're probably not going to win Album of the Year. And I wish they were, but I think U2 wins this one. The Coldplay record suffers from the albatross of, you know, their first two records were, in my mind, were magnificent. And this third one, you know, it was a lot of sizzle and no steak. And so, you know, it got a lot of hype leading up to its release, and it kind of disappeared quickly. So I think, and the Foo Fighters record is a double album. I think this one's got U2 written all over it.
Really? Yeah. Now, do you think that him with the Person of the Year business is gonna hurt some of these awards they're gonna give?
Well, you know, they say that there's no such thing as bad press, and U2 right now, you know, when we were talking about Album of the Year, U2's album, you know, they had the iPod sales, the iPod commercial. They went into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last year. They were everywhere in the fall of 2004. They've now pretty well, I think they've still got a few dates in Asia and Australia, but they've pretty well wrapped the How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb tour. Mm. I think, or the Vertigo tour is what they call it. I think that the Time Magazine honor keeps them in the news a little bit, and I think they may need that a little bit to remind people of just how good that album actually was and help them with the voting. I don't think it'll hurt them. The only way it could hurt them is, you know, Russell Crowe annoyed people when he beat up a producer at the BAFTA Awards, might have cost him an Oscar. I think if Bono gets too annoying, which he has done in the past, it could hurt him. But otherwise, I think, you know, I don't think it'll hurt him, and it may actually help.
Hmm. Yeah, let's see what happens with that. And they have now also have the Best Alternative Album, Funeral from the Arcade Fire, Guerrero from Beck, Plans by Death Cab for Cutie, right?
Yeah.
And You Can Have It So Much Better by Franz Ferdinand, and Get Behind Me Satan by the White Stripes. So what do you think of that?
Well, this is where a couple of my favorite albums of the year wound up. It's going to be a tough one. I was really disappointed that the White Stripes and Beck didn't get more nominations because I think they made fantastic records this year. In fact, when I do my best of the year, I can already tell you, Beck's Wero is going to wind up no worse than third on my list.
I really
love that album.
Huh.
And the White Stripes, this is not my favorite White Stripes album, but they, along with Fiona Apple's new record this year, the thing I like about them is they really expanded the possibilities for what a rock record can be with some of the instruments they used. And, it, you know, they're just really interesting records. And I think that they were, you know, Fiona, I don't think, got any nominations. And White Stripes, I think, were vastly under-nominated.
Hmm.
The Franz Ferdinand record is a fun dance record. Death Cab for Cutie, they kind of exploded with their release, but that has sort of fizzled in terms of the commercial and the hype since then. I think this is a battle between Beck and White Stripes.
Really?
I expect White Stripes to win it, but if it were up to me, this year I would take Beck. A couple years ago when White Stripes were actually up for Album of the Year, I thought Elephant should have won and was disappointed that it didn't. But I think Beck probably wins Best Alternative Album. Wero is just fantastic.
Wow. And also you want to mention about, of course, we mentioned it last week, about John Spencer passing away from the West Wing a couple weeks ago. Now, any idea what they're going to do with the character on the West Wing?
Well, you know, I've been reading and I've been sort of scrounging the the message boards, and really the last thing that I heard there was that they were going to have to, the writing staff had gotten together, that they were talking about possibly having to rewrite and even, you know, reshoot some things because of, you know, the passing of John Spencer, which was really sad because the wife to whom I'm married and I, we were late converts to West Wing, and you know, I've enjoyed John Spencer and some of the small roles he's played in other TV shows and movies, and he was one of our favorite characters on West Wing. But all of this may turn out to be for naught. The ratings for West Wing this year have been pretty poor, and there's been a lot of speculation that when they, you know, Jed Bartlett's presidency and the show may end right around the same time.
Well, I mean, that's, well, I think it's pretty much been confirmed that once this is over, the season's over, the show's over. I don't know where I read that at, but I was led to believe all along that this is going to be the last season, unless the ratings suddenly go through the roof. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't see that happening.
No.
You know, I've been going back and watching some of the shows on DVD. Season 5 just came out this month. And, you know, we're watching season 5 right now, and you can already see that, you know, in addition to Aaron Sorkin leaving, and it's very easy to blame the show's demise on the departure of Aaron Sorkin. But, you know, I think even if Sorkin had stayed, it looked like a show that was, I don't want to necessarily say running out of ideas, but American democracy isn't exciting for 42 minutes a night every week.
Yeah.
You can only bomb so many, you know, unnamed Middle Eastern dictators and, you know, have so many natural disasters before it starts to seem a little bit played. And even though they had interesting characters and I thought did a nice job on the show, I think like with most television dramas and comedies, you know, there's a shelf life for these things, and, you know, John Spencer's passing notwithstanding, like you said, the show was going to have to really perform, and then they changed its night and time slot as if to, you know, almost as if to seal its fate before it even got out of the box. They put it in
Sunday.
On a Sunday night, which is TV's no man's land
in
the fall against ESPN Sunday night football games, and you know, they pretty much decided they wanted rid of the show, in my opinion, the moment they did that.
Yeah, now, isn't Desperate Housewives also on Sunday nights, too? So they throw it up against that.
Yeah, so it's... for the five people who aren't watching the Sunday night game or Desperate Housewives, you know which one I'm watching. I came up with the NFL first.
There you go.
For the five people who aren't watching either of those two things, oh, look, there's the West Wing. And so it was pretty much hosed right from the get-go.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a shame because I thought that as far as, you know, in a stage right now where most of the interesting TV shows are happening on, well, on HBO or a lot on cable, I thought this was one of the few thoughtful shows that the networks had put forth. And, you know, to see it go and to not see a whole lot coming up to replace it, you know, it's...
Yeah, I mean, what's NBC going to do when they take West Wing off and throw on another, you know, Big Fat Loser or whatever they call it? I mean, these reality shows are getting ridiculous, you know?
Well, you know, which preposterous celebrity do we want to host, you know, another version of The Apprentice?
You know,
maybe if Arnold Schwarzenegger gets run out of California, you know, and his tagline will be, "You're terminated." Sorry for
there
the
you
back
go.
Schwarzenegger impersonation, guys.
You could be the apprentice Governor Schwarzenegger. Somebody could be like his chief of staff for 12 weeks, and they eliminate him. Yeah, you're Terminator. So, that's a good idea.
Hey, listen, you know, once again, it's Josh, care of Blog Critics, DJ Radiohead, send those royalty checks this way. I'm sure they've already thought of that.
Yeah, instead of your fire, you say, hasta la vista, baby. You know what I mean? All that stuff. Oh, I think it'd be classic, you know?
You know, if he stays in office long enough, or even if he gets out, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see them keep trying to, you know, to beat that dead horse because, you know, let's face it, you know, everything's cyclical. The Apprentice and the Apprentice 2, one of these rival networks is going to try and run something out there, you know, just like, well, heck, you could even say that the Apprentice followed in the steps of, you know, didn't Diddy or P. Diddy, what do we call him this week?
Didn't
he have one where he was trying to break in some protege, label on MTV?
It's like the Rockstar or something like that. Yeah, he had a show, and then, I don't know, I mean, there's so many of these damn reality shows. And then, like, The Apprentice, like I say, with Martha Stewart, they can keep her program on the air. Why don't they just move it over to Bravo or the Food Network or something like that? I mean, I'm sure they get an audience over there for a show like that with her on it, you know?
Well, you know, I would think so.
Yeah.
I would think so, but my guess is they probably had to pay through the nose to get her, and maybe one of the cable companies didn't have that kind of budget. But I was surprised that they pulled the plug so quickly on that one. But I don't know. Maybe jail is only good for certain images, and Martha isn't one of them.
Yeah, yeah. How about
the talk show hasn't been pulling down, you know,
no,
any of the ratings either.
No, her talk show is struggling, too. So she's not the golden child of ratings and media as they thought she was when she was in jail. They thought she was going to come out and set the world on fire.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess there are certain images where incarceration can benefit you or at least, you know, not hurt you. And then there are ones where, you know, it doesn't pay off as well or, you know, I think the other thing is maybe Martha tried to come back too soon.
Yeah.
I think that had she come out, laid low for a few years or, you know, even just a year and slowly tried to make a comeback, I think we've also seen that with celebrities who fall from grace. If you go away for a little while, keep your nose clean, stay out of trouble. You know, just about everybody gets a second act in Hollywood and, you know, she may still get a third. There's no denying she's made a lot of money for herself and a lot of other people.
Oh, yeah.
And she may get, you know, yet another shot. So we'll see.
Well, Josh, we thank you very much for being on the program.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it a whole lot.
Thank you very much, Josh.
Good night.
Good night now. Happy New Year.
You too.
Thank you. And that was Josh from DJ Rayohead from blogcritics.org. We thank him for the report. It was very interesting about the albums and music of the year, you know, going towards the Grammys. I mean, it's interesting. I don't know who half these people are on this list. I know who Mariah Carey is and Paul McCartney, but Gwen Stefani, of course, but U2, I don't know, Kanye West. Kanye West got beat up over what he said after the hurricane hit New Orleans, so I don't think he's probably going to get to not too many awards from that. I mean, he said that President Bush hates black people. I mean, that was out of nowhere. You know, and some of these others, like U2. U2's got all these, you know, how many nominations they have? Good grief. Mariah Carey and Kanye West each received 8 nominations for Grammy Awards. Wow. But like he was saying, like Josh was saying, this John Spencer dying in West Wing, I mean, that's going to throw this whole show up for grabs, the whole program, because Leo McGarry, who's the vice president candidate to Jimmy Smith's character on the West Wing, now it's going to throw all that up for grabs. So I don't know who they're going to pick. Probably the other one that's on there, that guy who's married to that chick from where the hell that show is on Fox, the kid in the middle. What's the name of that show? You know that show I'm talking about on Fox, the kid. Yeah, what's his name? Maverick in the middle?
Malcolm
in the middle. Yeah, I think that guy, whoever his name is, is his name Josh on the show? I think it's Josh, whatever the hell his name is. I think it's Josh. Yeah, Toby's the one that got that Bartlett fired. I think Josh is the one. I'd probably have Josh be the VP to Smith now with John Spencer's Leo McGarry dying. So, but and then we'll be joined, should be joined in a few minutes by Judy from the Sci-Fi Buzz. She hasn't called in, has she?
No.
She's not yet? No. So, and we'll talk about the year interview with Sci-Fi. Of course, the January 6th is the big premiere of Galactica, so we're all looking forward to that. The ads have been running pretty solid, especially on MSNBC. Every news program, they take a break and they talk about Galactica. So hopefully, it sounds like it's going to be a good season coming up, the last 10 episodes of the second season. And, of course, last week we had the spoilers with Koenig Rules, talking about the Dean Stockwell coming on the last two episodes of the season from Quantum Leap, and so that's who's he going to play? I don't know, some new Cylons. We're looking forward to seeing who that is, and some kind of brother. They're going to call him a brother, so I don't know if he's like going to be one of the religious leaders of the Cylons. I mean, who knows? That's where they're heading. And like I said, they did drop the plans for the episode that's going to have the view of things from the Cylon point of view. But they've dropped that episode completely, and because when they come back, the show that they're going to come back with is going to turn into a two-parter because they have so much material. They decided making a two-parter episode, and one of the episodes they had to drop an episode, and they decided to drop the one from the Cylon point of view. So we'll see what happens there. And actually, on the newspaper, I was reading this. Where was I here? From the what the hell is it? Some newspaper. The Northern Pennsylvania's home is the Times Leader. They're talking about 2005's memorable TV moments and people. And they went through, like, Rome and all that, Lost. And they talked about, where are we at here? Other holy cow moments was John O'Hurley and his partner losing the Dancing with the Stars BS. Computer nerd Chloe blowing away bad guys in 24. And they also have a Cylon shooting Commander Adama in the Battlestar Galactica Season 1 finale. And then the bad guys kidnapping Walt from the raft on Lost. And they also have Robert Novak storming off the CNN talk show in a huff and swearing on the air. So we'll see. But it was pretty memorable when Boomer shot Adama. Nobody thought that was coming. So I just wonder what this year's going to end with. You know, how many times can they shoot Adama? So I'm still working on that surprise for hopefully for next week. That's going to be for the 10 episodes coming up. I'm still working on it. This person has to get clear. Apparently, going to have to get some kind of clearance or see if they really want to do this or not. So, and what else they had? TV's Most Watchable Jerks, Neil Patrick Harris from that show, what the hell, How I Met Your Mother. I have yet to see that one. I don't know what that show is about. Obviously, it's How I Met Your Mother, but he went from Doogie Howser to playing some jerk on a comedy. And what else? Let's see. Lost, killing off that, what's his name, that guy, and they killed off that sister this season. Where else we have here? Well, Katrina and all that dominated the news with Anderson Cooper and all that. And Ted Koppel quitting Nightline and Peter Jennings dying from World News Tonight. That was pretty big. And also, what's his name? Dan Rather quitting the CBS Evening News. That was pretty big news as well. So we lost, in 1 year, we lost all three of the network anchors. And if you could count Ted Koppel, it's four. And then CNN turned around and they fired Aaron Brown to move Anderson Cooper to his time slot and give him 2 hours. And then move that Situation Room to 2 hours, 3 hours actually as well. So, but then, and actually the sci-fi shows are dropping by the wayside because a couple of them have been canceled. Like I say, I don't invest emotional time into these network sci-fi shows because they don't put enough time into them. You know, whereas Sci-Fi Channel puts in enough time and everything. They got the Triangle, and of course Galactica. Now they renewed it for a third season. They got all these books coming out. I'm on Judy's site right now, so hopefully she'll be calling in. She has on there about Hollywood North Report is giving away a copy of Battlestar Galactica Season 2.0, a DVD box set. So don't forget that Season 2.0 is going to only have the 10 episodes, and it won't be the expanded episode Pegasus, which will be in the second box set at the end of the next second 10 episodes. So we'll see what happens with that. And I've yet to find it here in Vegas, the second the season 2.0. And on the cover, it has Adama on there with, of course, the lovely and attractive Six there in a nice blue little dress there, cut very deep into her cleavage. Look at that. And then Boomer's on there. But why do the Cylons have the red glowing eyes all the time? You never see them with the red glowing eyes on the TV show, yet on all the posters and ads, they have the glowing red eyes. You know, they don't have the eyes like the old show, but it makes it look like they do. I don't know. I mean, we'll see. So, yeah, Hollywood North is giving away one copy of the Battlestar Galactica Season 2.0. So, I mean, how many CDs can they have in there? It could be probably like, what, DVD, probably like two of them for 10 episodes? What do you think? Probably. Maybe five of them. Two on a disc. I don't know. What do you think? At least. So we'll see what happens. And that's nice. So you see Omos on the cover. And it looks like his hair is a little grayer now than it was before. So now he's dyeing his hair from the left over. Last season was from the right over. So every year we got to look for his hair, see what he does different with his hair every year. So maybe next season he'll be parted down the middle, or maybe he'll be a blonde. Huh? I don't know. And then what else we have going on here? And so we'll see. I mean, hopefully, where's she? if Judy's out there, you can call in now. We could talk about anything new in sci-fi at the end of the year, and about Galactica if you want to talk about it. And like I said, I can't wait for it to come back. I mean, it's an outstanding series. The acting is great. They left it in a pretty big cliffhanger with the ships all flying at one another, the Vipers from the Galactica and the Pegasus. And some of the previews have been pretty cool with Leah Dama, like he's dead, laying somewhere dead. So let's see. I hope it's going to keep going. And what are they saying? If Judy's not going to call in, if you want to call in and talk about Galactica, we look forward to the second season. It's 1-866-587-6257 or directly to Las Vegas. It's 702-383-8120. And we can talk about what you expect or what's your favorite moment of the year from Galactica, from the first 10 episodes, or what you hope to look forward to in the second 10 episodes. And, we're going to see what's-her-name come back as the character. Xena is going to come back as the reporter. We know that. She's coming back. They're going to have that new Cylon, Gina. She's going to be on there causing trouble. And we're going to have two Sixes on, two versions of Six. We got the Gina Six, and we have the Blonde Six. So she'll be on there. And then, how many boomers are we going to see running around on that ship? So, I don't know. And there's actually some scenes I want to see that were deleted from the Pegasus episode to have Kane interacting with the Galactica boomer. So we'll see. I think that'd be pretty cool. I liked, what's her name, plays, she played Ro, Michelle Forbes. I thought she did an outstanding job as Kane. Now, we do know from Koenig Rules from a couple weeks ago that the Kane character isn't going to be on after the first episode back in January. So now what's going to happen to Kane? Is Kane going to be dead, or is Kane going to be sent off to a prison ship, or what's exactly going to happen to Kane? Or is Kane just going to disappear like that one did when Six was on the ship for real? She just disappeared off the Galactica completely. Is Kane going to do the same thing, just disappear? I don't know. Will Kane turn out to be a Cylon? Yeah, you never know. That'd be kind of cool. The whole Pegasus ends up being full of Cylon. Yeah, it'd be interesting. It'd be like a Trojan horse there into the Colonial fleet. And then we know that Dama is going to get promoted to Admiral by Roslyn. And then a lot of the action apparently in the second 10 episodes is going to be based on the Pegasus. And they're going to have Lee's going to be promoted to the Pegasus as commander, apparently. And then Starbuck's going to get promoted to a CAG. Also on the Pegasus. So, I mean, a lot of the action seems to be moving over to the Pegasus. I don't know what's going to happen to the Galactica. But, and then you got the baby. The baby is going to be coming, probably. Boomer's baby. She's going to give birth to this half-Cylon, half-human baby, probably. And then we know that Baltar is going to use some of the stem cells from the baby that Cylon Boomer is going to have. And he's going to use the stem cells to save Roslyn from the cancer, supposedly. So we'll see. And then where happens to that thing from Alosha that the leader is going to die before leading her people to Earth? So is that now we've been kind of a misnomer that it's going to be Roslyn, it's going to be somebody else now that's going to die before the humans reach Earth? Will it be Adama that's going to die before they reach Earth? Maybe. I don't know. If I had a bet right now, I'd probably say it will be Adama. You know, Omos? How long is Omos going to want to do this show? You want to do it for five seasons or what? You know, I don't know. That'd be a little twist on, I think, if Omos, Adama winds up the one dying before they reach Earth versus Roslyn, and Roslyn ends up staying on the whole show. So, and then who will replace Commander Adama? Will it be his son? Will it be Kane? I don't know. So, I don't know. We'll see. Then we got Stargate coming back. Stargate SG-1, SG Atlantis, both coming back. And, she's got news here about SG-1. I have yet to get into that show. And what's his name? Biznatch supposed to give me DVDs of Atlantis. I've yet to see those DVDs there. But I don't know. I still think the better show is Galactica of all of them. You know, and the only thing I say I wish they do is that Firefly. You said you saw Firefly. You liked it, right? You start Serenity?
I saw the movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I watch series all the time.
Yeah. You liked it, right?
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, now would you watch it they brought back as a series?
Hell yeah.
No, because Universal bought the rights now. So Universal.
I watched it when it was first on Fox, and I was very pissed off that they canceled the show. And then when they re-aired it on Sci-Fi, I taped it every week and watched it.
Yeah.
And I didn't get a chance to see it in the movie theater, but I just saw it because it just came out on DVD.
Yeah.
Awesome movie. Couple surprises that I think you'll be like, oh.
Really?
You'll be very heartbroken.
Uh-oh. Did the Cylons show up in this round?
No, the Cylons didn't show up.
But I mean, because now with if Universal...
Yeah, a couple shocking things that happened.
Really?
The wit is still there. The very dry, sarcastic humor of the cast, which is great because they don't miss a beat.
Mm.
And, you know, the Preacher, he has a very small role. He's in a couple scenes. Not...
Nothing really big, though?
Yeah, he's not in a lot of the movie, which, you know, when you first start watching the movie, when you see him not on the boat, you figure, okay, he's either not in the movie or he's got a very small role, so yeah. Which he does.
Huh. Now with Universal...
But the storyline is good. So.
Like, good storyline? Now, did they set it up where they can possibly continue this as a series, or what?
Or the movie end? I guess they could, but really? It's kind of what's the point?
Really? They end it in such a way where it wraps everything up, or what?
No, I mean, what I mean is just make another movie.
Yeah.
Why make a series? It was already a series, which failed. You made it into a movie, which is pretty popular. Mm-hmm. And I think if you keep it as a movie, people will be waiting for the next movie. You make it a series, I think you kind of dwindle it. You can't really make another movie out of it.
Yeah.
Unless you can't get a movie deal.
Maybe.
If you can't get a movie deal to make a second one, and you can't bring the cast back...
Mm.
That's the only thing. You have to bring the originals because I don't think it's going to work if you keep bringing new people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what if he doesn't get a movie deal, but Sci-Fi Channel offers him to do movies on Sci-Fi Channel? That'd be kind of cool.
As long as he had total control. But you know what? The special effects are going to... I don't think he would...
Cheapens it? Yeah.
Because you could tell the special effects are just awesome. It's a lot cleaner than the TV version, which is, you know... It's pretty good graphics, but it's still kind of...
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Because I keep saying that having all these shows in a row on Friday is killing Galactica. What do you think? Having Firefly, SG-1, whatever the hell it's called, Atlantis, and then Galactica. I think they should move Firefly to a different night. And if they're going to bring it back as a series, move it to Saturday night or something, huh?
Yeah. Well, maybe not Saturday. Just another night. Just to get programming on another... Just to...
Exactly.
Sell some of your other programming.
Exactly. Because
Battlestar Galactica got probably some people hooked onto some of the other shows.
Yeah. I mean, usually I sit through Atlantis just so I can catch Galactica. You know, I mean, I'm starting to like Atlantis because it's getting a little more serious. But, I mean, SG-1, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's gotten better since I got rid of MacGyver. I never did get into it because once they recast MacGyver in Kurt Russell's role, I mean, just kind of lost it. I mean, the first Stargate in the movie, the theatrical movie was more serious. And MacGyver turned into like a joke fest. But now they're getting more into the mythology and all this stuff on Stargate SG-1. And Atlantis has gotten a lot more serious, too. So which I think maybe they've taken...
Yeah, but I heard... I think it's... You got a 50-50 split there. Because I've heard a lot of people stop watching it because Michael Dean Anderson's not on the show anymore.
Well, I mean, you think these other shows took the hint from Galactica?
Yeah, I think it depends who you are. Like me, I never got into it. And I probably could never because every time I see him, I'm like, that's MacGyver. I can't watch it. I can't watch it.
Well, now they got the dude down there from Farscape playing the leader now. You know, he's a little more believable because he's been in the sci-fi business for a while. And people are still mad that they canceled Farscape. You know, a lot of them blame Galactica for that they canceled Farscape so they can, the budget they can afford to bring Galactica on. So I don't know. And then I don't know. I mean, I think these other two shows have taken a hint from Galactica. They can be serious and still draw viewers. Like Galactica has been a pretty serious program and it's drawn in viewers. I think SG-1 and Atlantis were like goofy, not like half serious type of shows. But once they saw how successful Battlestar could be with these continuing storylines and all that, they went for it too. Now, because you notice all of a sudden in the second season, all three of the shows now are serious with their storylines. Now, when the Galactica was first on, they were the only ones with the serious storylines. Well, I mean, they're all serious storylines, but this humor and a lot of this repartee between the characters, now they've all gotten serious. I think a lot of it comes from Battlestar Galactica on there. They've seen the success from that. You know, the most highest rated sci-fi miniseries in the history of whatever it is, and in the most the greatest show on television and all this stuff. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, how long could Galactica survive? You know, they renewed it for a third season. Will it go 5 years? Battlestar? They keep the cast together, probably. Will almost stick around for five seasons?
That I don't know. It should stick around 5 years or so.
Yeah, because well, started SG-1's lasted like 9, right?
If anything, at least. Well, see, the thing is, seasons aren't 20 episodes. I mean, they've done two seasons, but it's been only 12 episodes apiece. Yeah. So, but you know, that's I think that's a lot of programming is gearing towards. Instead of 20 episodes, half of them crack. I'd rather have 12 episodes, like. Kind of like two mini seasons in a year and a half than having one long...
Yeah, there's a bunch of stupid episodes like Star Trek used to be. So you go off to these stupid planets and all this stuff, you know, with the people with the three eyes and all that.
Yeah, well, you know, if they do like 12 season episodes, they should be able to get easily five if they can... I think writing-wise, you can easily get five because technically you've been through two episodes and they haven't even gotten to the... bulk, I don't think. They're about, I'd say, maybe close to halfway through maybe the stories that the original...
Yeah, because the storylines move very slow in Galactica. We saw during the first season, you know, every time they showed Hilo, it was like, you know, last episode of the first season,
I would like
3 days on Caprica.
I would like to see...
It's only been 3 days.
12 seasons. Five seasons, 12 episodes apiece, which would put you through... The January, then maybe
July.
September, and then January. So another 2 years. And then I'd come out with a wait about a year, year and a half, and come out with a, like a theatrical movie.
Really? Like Battlestar Galactica theatrical movie?
Kind of like,
wow.
Like Serenity.
There you go.
And have like the season end with the, just like X-Files, although they didn't end their season with it, although... Yeah.
They led into it.
Although, there's X-Files 2 being
there
made.
There you go. Well, I mean, how about the end of
Galactica? But it's got the X-Files 2 movie that's coming out. It's got nothing to do with the aliens. It's just like a standalone movie.
Yeah, I think
why
do you even call it X-Files and not going to do with
aliens?
Well,
they're going to have Duchovny and what's-her-name. But
well, what are they going to do?
I'm like, look, people, I'm telling you, the true X-Files, although what's-her-name in the chat room didn't think
Starbuck?
No.
Oh, Night
this
Sky?
This was last week.
Oh,
her name.
Scully Girl. She's not in the chat room.
Yeah,
today.
She, you know, she was. She says she didn't feel like getting shafted. I feel like I was telling her in the chat room, dude, we got shafted. That 2-hour series finale of X-Files was crap. Yeah. She's like, oh, well, it gave us the whole. We already know the whole story. Why do I need to rehash the whole thing again?
Yeah.
I don't need to be sitting here watching 2 hours of Mulder getting
ass raped.
No, he's being interrogated of everything that's happened. I already know what's happened. I want to see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And
I don't know. They always do that. It's Star Trek The Next Generation ended kind of, well, it was a good ending, but goofy. I thought they should have made the Star Trek series finale the actual movie because they did all that back and forth between the future, you know, blah, blah, blah. They kept going back and forth. I thought, wow, this is pretty cool, but you lost track. What the hell's going on? You know, it's like,
why a lot of, not the situational comedies, they have like the series finales. They do pretty good as far as ending it.
Yeah.
Whereas it seems like 1 hour dramas, they can't
wrap
figure
everything
out.
Up.
The only one that I could think of that had a great ending, although I can't remember Knight Rider. I don't ever remember that ending. But Quantum Leap.
Ah.
And you know why?
Yeah.
Because it didn't have the typical Hollywood ending. Did you ever see the final episode?
No.
He leaped into this bar. It was called Al's Bar. The guy behind the bar was Al.
Ah.
Which was the...
Dean Stockwell?
No. What's his name? He played in Animal House. He's played small parts in other movies, but he was MacGyver's buddy.
Oh.
And MacGyver.
Yeah. The old guy with the bald head?
No. The guy with the mustache.
Oh, I don't know.
Jack? Jack Dalton. Remember he used to...
with MacGyver.
Well, he was playing the guy bartender.
Yeah.
And these people would come in every now and then into the bar, but it was people from, like, in the previous episodes.
Really?
Where he helped them out. And when he looked in the, at the beginning of this episode, when he looked in, the, he sat at the bar, he looked at the mirror, he saw his reflection. He's like, he's like thinking, did I live into myself? But basically, the way it ends is They kind of make a premise like the guy of the bartender is a god, supposedly.
Mm.
You know, because he keeps asking him, why am I being leaped this end? And then he asks him about, like, one thing that he'd like to correct, and he goes back in time, and he tells... There was one episode where Al's wife, because she leaves him because she thought he was dead, he goes back in time and tells her he's still alive, don't get remarried. And then they show, like, a picture frame, and they show Al getting back with his wife.
Oh.
And then they show a scripture, you know, like words, like, yeah. Al and blah, blah, blah were married happily ever after. And then they show, what's his face?
Dean Stockwell?
No. Oh. Scott Bakula. Show him, and he says, never goes home.
Really?
He's still leaping.
Oh.
Which I think is
Dean Stockwell.
Of a sad ending.
What happened to his character? Dean Stockwell.
I just told you. Al.
Oh, he's Al?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know he was Al.
Jesus Christ.
Call me Al. But then, a lot of these shows, like Galactica, are they going to end Finding Earth? I don't think so. They set up for a movie. They'll probably end it with, maybe have the Galactica passing Saturn or something like that. That'd be kind of cool. You know, if they end it like that, I think that'd be outstanding. They end it with the Galactica somehow jumping, and they end up, we don't know where the hell they're at. All of a sudden, they pull away, and then they're right by the rings of Saturn. That'd be kind of cool way of ending the show. You know, if they're not sure where they're at, but then the viewer knows that they're at least in our hemisphere, or not in our hemisphere, in our galaxy. Yeah, I think that'd be kind of cool to see that. You know, what do you think?
Does midterm election mean anything? Is he going to talk about that next week?
Midterm elections? Who's that?
Justin, whatever.
Oh, you want to talk about midterm elections?
No, next week.
Oh, next week? That's fine. Yeah, we can talk about midterm elections. Yeah. Midterm elections on Galactica. Who's going to win the race with Rosalind and what the hell's his name? Richard Hatch. This is Tom Zarek's character. Anyway, I'm sorry Judy didn't call in, but I mean, I hope she's not mad over last week. But she said it was all right if Conan called in. I thought, you know, for Christmas, he wanted to call in and give us some news. So, yeah, that'd be cool. And so hopefully next week I'll have this little arrangement worked out, nailed down, and we can announce something for next week for the second episode. Actually, Starbucks saying Jupiter would be better, more recognizable. Wait a minute now. What's more recognizable than the damn rings of Saturn, for crying out loud? You know what I mean? What do you think? Jupiter? I guess they showed a little orange thing on the planet. I don't know what the hell. But I think it'd be more recognizable. You see Saturn's rings. How about the Galactica jumps in the middle of one of the Saturn's rings or something? Bang, bang, bang. What the hell is that? Oh, it's the rings of Saturn. You know, I don't know.
What's your sci-fi New Year's resolution?
Watch Galactica. I don't know. I don't know. It's sci-fi. What the hell? What do you mean?
Well, is there something you'd like to see in the next
Star
year?
Trek? The new Star Trek, a new Star Trek movie. You don't think so? Oh, the Superman movie is supposed to be pretty good with Marlon Brando making an appearance as Jor-El, a dead Marlon Brando talking to the Superman in this movie.
How's that?
That's gonna be cool. They're using footage from the first movie that they never used before, and also audio from all of Marlon Brando's other movies. They're gonna splice that into the Superman.
Oh,
that should be cool. Don't you think so?
Is it look not like
my son?
Is it gonna be all split like this, where he just I don't know.
It's gonna be irky. Ugh, my son. I thought he'd be outside. I hope he doesn't talk like the Godfather though.
I'll make you an offer you can't refuse.
If he talks
Where's
like,
the horse, damn it?
If he talks like that, I'm not going to watch the rest of it. I'll walk out. He talks like the Godfather.
They took footage from the Godfather movie and put it in Superman.
Oh, my son.
They say, I also could have been a contender, right?
I could have been a contender, not a pretender.
If he says that, I'll stop. I'll walk out of that movie. I mean, I hope he didn't.
Oh,
that's
another thing about the King Kong movie.
Uh-oh. Batman shows up? Superman?
When you said about...
Oh, voiceover?
The last... If you've seen the King Kong movie, you're going to hear... So you know how they sometimes come out with the top 100 movie quotes of all time? I'll tell you right now...
Uh-oh.
King Kong, the last phrase of the movie where Jack Black says something after King Kong splat on the ground is the worst...
Word of the...
Quote.
Uh-oh.
Not weird, just the most asinine quote ever.
Really?
You know what he says?
He's dead, Jim.
No.
I'm
He's
a
like,
doctor, not a tailor, damn it.
It's not... he says something like, it's not humans that killed the beast, it's beauty or something like that. And I'm like...
You gotta be kidding. That's never... I'm not gonna see that movie. What the hell? Beauty that kills the beast? Did they say...
It's not... What's that saying? It's not... Something killed the beast... What's that saying?
I don't know. I didn't see the movie.
No. There's a saying out there.
Oh.
Beauty killed the beast?
Beauty killed the beast. Yeah, the woman probably, responsible for the ape getting killed.
There's another saying, but he says something along the lines like, beauty killed the beast or something.
Oh,
maybe he says it wasn't, that's what it was. I think he says it wasn't the fall that killed the beast, it's the beauty or something.